If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
The money's not made in the real estate. The money is made in the money. And the more money you control, the more real estate you can buy. So the first thing I tell people is that let's get you out of the real estate business. Stop thinking of yourself as a real estate person and think of yourself as a money person.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Hey, Joel, welcome to the show.
Sam, thanks for having me, man. How are you?
I'm doing great. Just so our listeners have an idea of who it is that they're listening to, can you give us a quick bio on yourself?
Yeah, I'm a longtime venture capitalist and hedge fund manager, and I started in the real estate syndication business. You know, started as a youngster right out of CPA school at Price Waterhouse, and fell into syndication, started raising money. I did a total of 8 deals back in the 80s, and then fell into some venture capital, and then came back to the world of hedge funds and real estate right after the market crash in 2009. So that's kind of my really, really quick story. I mean, I could spread it out for half an hour. You know, you got it in 30 seconds. So there you go.
Right. Yeah, I know there's a lot. There's a lot there. Give us an idea on what it is that you guys are doing today.
Well, today, I run a small fund that's actually winding down because it's reached the end of its useful life. We bought some notes. We bought we got some land and built ground up. We rehabbed some houses. You know, so it was a distressed asset fund. We also teach other people how to raise equity capital, not private money, not hard money, you know, equity capital, because that's really the hard money, that's the difficult money to get a hold of. And there's only a small number of ways that it can legally be done in the United States of America. And that's, you know, people don't always realize it, but that's the one thing. When you get more money, it opens up doors that you can't imagine. So we've put 1,000 people through our program in the last dozen years, and probably spawned from that program probably, more than 100 funds, probably 200 syndications. And I would say that the people who have gone through our program have raised probably close to $1 billion.
That's awesome. Good for you guys.
Yeah,
good for you guys.
It's been good.
Yeah. How fun. I mean, that's rewarding, I'm sure, just to see, your information then get transmitted to other people's brains and see them take action.
Yeah. Listen, I've done very well. This business has been good to me. I think we have a certain obligation to help other people. So, that's kind of, become a big part of what we do, is helping other people get up and running.
Right. Do me a favor, and just for our listeners, in case they don't know the difference, can you define what you mean by equity capital?
You know, what a lot of people, especially earlier stage people, what they'll do is they'll try to buy a house or whatever they're going to buy, an apartment, whatever it is, and they'll go get some hard money. They'll go get some private money, which is, basically a private person that loans them money, as opposed to hard money, which is probably more professional money. But the truth is, the best way to buy is to be able to bring your own cash to the table, put a down payment, that's usually equity, and then the bank will match that with some high quality debt. And so let's say you put 20, they put 80, that's a typical formula, and that's how you buy a piece of real estate. Now, you may not have that 20%, especially for a larger deal, so you got to go get it. So you got to bring it in from other people. So let's say you're going to buy a $3 million apartment building, and you got to come up with $750,000 down payment, let's just say a round number. You might slice that up like a loaf of bread. And that's what Wall Street does very well, is they slice investments up like a loaf of bread, so that this person can buy 2 slices, this person can buy 4 slices, and each slice is a share of stock. So you might say they're $25,000 a share. How many do you want? But you can only do that if you have the right kind of structure. And that's what we help people build, are those structures. And that's how Wall Street does it. You don't just say, hey, give me some money and let's go buy something. Because if it's not properly organized, you could just have a world of problems in the future.
Right. And that sounds a lot like a typical syndication. When you buy into a syndication, you're buying shares in that company.
That's what it is. It's a syndication structure or a fund structure. We just have, taken it to a pretty high level.
Right. Cool. Well, you know, the same questions I ask everybody, which we've kind of gone over, which is where'd you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there? We've kind of covered a little bit of that. Give us some ideas, you know, some lessons you've learned along the way as it pertains to raising equity. Like, what are some things you see people doing right? Things you see people doing wrong? I mean, just give us.
Well, I'll tell you one thing is that first thing people need to realize that are trying to raise capital is that they are not, the money's not made in the real estate. The money is made in the money. And the more money you control, the more real estate you can buy. So the first thing I tell people is that let's get you out of the real estate business. Stop thinking of yourself as a real estate person and think of yourself as a money person. And by moving mentally into the money business, it makes all the difference in the world because that really is the way that the money gets made. Now, I'm not talking about the leverage from the bank. I'm talking about by controlling the equity capital. That's really the power of the whole deal. Another thing that I would probably have to say, let me think, you know, investors make a lot of mistakes, active investors. And one of the reasons that they make a mistake is because they use the generic word investor. And you have to be a little more specific. There are active investors and there are passive investors. The passives are the people that we're looking for to invest in syndications and funds. The actives are the people that are putting syndications and funds together. Active investors, people that buy their own houses, rehab them, flip them, whatever. They tend not to be great investors in syndications because they like to be hands-on and be involved. So it's very important when people say, I'm having trouble raising money. Well, who are you going to? Well, I'm just going to investors. Well, what kind? Let's be more specific. So I find that a little bit of specificity helps people to be more successful in raising their capital.
That's interesting. And you said something, you said that what you're seeing are as investors going to other investors trying to raise capital, which doesn't make any sense.
Well, everybody's an investor. The way I look at the world, every CEO of a company is an investor. They're paying payroll with the expectation of getting 10 times back later on. Everybody's an investor in some, either a stock market. They may not be a professional investor now. Most of us active investors become professional investors because we do it all day long and we're good at it. So other people are not professional, but we're all investors. And if you go to any of the real estate clubs, everybody's an investor. Everybody who touches real estate is an investor, but that's really a misnomer. And you really would be doing yourself a great service to be more specific and separate the actives from the passives.
Sure. Yeah, well, that absolutely makes sense. Absolutely makes sense. As you review your career and, I mean, all the various things you've done, what are some things maybe that you would have done differently?
You know, I probably would have used public relations and the media more to put me out there in the spotlight a little more because that would have helped me to attract even more capital. And, you know, when you're somebody who is well known as an expert. I've become the status that I want now, but I would like to have had that status 20 years ago. And I could have done that faster and better using the media. Now, social media is not the same as the media. Social media is kind of our fantasy about being famous, but the media is really a place where you put your expertise on display in the marketplace. And, you know, it's really important for people who want to be at a high level to be putting their expertise, their thought leadership, their knowledge in the marketplace because people seek out thought leaders and experts.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And your contention is that there are other channels outside of social media that people should be doing that on?
Absolutely. Now listen, they should be doing it in traditional media, television, even if the television runs on internet media, because when you're using traditional media, there just is a certain panache, there's a certain cachet about traditional media that people prefer. And even if you recycle some of those pieces using the social media channels, which is exactly what you should do, it should be recorded in traditional media format and then recycled through the social media channels so that the people who are in your world, your tribe, all see that material. And there's kind of a rhythm to how that works and a little beyond the scope of this discussion, but it's important that people catch on to that.
That seems like an expensive way to launch for a, you know, somebody starting out to say, all right, you know, I'm going to go out into the traditional print, television, that sort of channels. I mean, those are not inexpensive ways to get your name and brand. Well,
first of all, it doesn't cost anything to go on television. I'm not talking about going on Good Morning America on channels, you know, the biggest one in the country, you know, but there's thousands of small stations around the country that are looking for an expert to comment on real estate, comment on markets, comment on pricing, rentals, why are prices high? Explain how the migration from urban to suburban and even into the country has affected pricing as a result of the pandemic, work from home, all these kinds of phenomenon. People don't understand what this is, so they're looking for experts. And then think about those passive investors that see you and they say, wow, that guy, I like that guy. I like that person's style. I like their knowledge. I would like to speak with that person because I want to talk to them about some of my personal affairs. And and one of the things that I always say, I never sell securities because that's not what you're supposed to do. But I always indicate, hey, listen, you know, and I've got a fund, and investors, bring their money to me, and then we share the profits. And by saying that, somebody who's interested might tap me on the shoulder in the future and say, hey, can I talk to you about doing some work together? So it doesn't have to cost a lot. It might cost something to have a PR person help you, but you can do this work all by yourself from the first day you start in business. This is not a first day start in business kind of strategy though, because you have to bring enough smart to the table. Now, if you're a real estate broker or agent and you've been doing this for a long time and now you want to move into the acquisition side personally, you have way more than enough experience and track record to be able to do that. And by the way, I would go a step further and say that anybody who's going to go raise equity capital wouldn't be a beginner anyway, because you can't raise equity capital, do a syndication without a track record, without something behind you. So now you can go borrow hard money or private money, on your first day if somebody will give it to you, but you probably can't raise equity capital that same way.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's fascinating. Walk us through some deals maybe that you guys have done and the things that you did right, and maybe a deal where you would have done something differently.
Well, we have a pretty solid formula because we base the formula on the way that Wall Street does it. And the reason that we do it the way Wall Street does it is because that's what the CPAs and attorneys in the world are used to. So when you show your materials to a CPA or attorney, when a prospective investor shows it to their CPA or attorney, if you make up funky deal terms that no one ever heard of before, and you have some kind of arrangement that no one ever heard of before, and you've got documents that no one's ever seen before, and you've created them out of thin air and you're all proud of yourself because how creative you are, this is not a business that rewards that level of creativity. You want to be that creative, be an artist, be a painter, be a designer, do graphic artwork. But when you're writing contracts and doing spreadsheets and showing accountants and attorneys, they don't want funky, weird stuff. They want to see what they're used to. And they're used to doing it the way Wall Street does it. So, we have really adopted that model. I mean, it's the model I learned at Pricewaterhouse as a youngster when I was doing tax work for hundreds of syndications, windmills, and other different kinds of structures. And although now we have enhanced it, we've made it better, as we've learned along the way, we've improved it. But that structure, this business is 50 or 60 years old. And I would strongly encourage people to stay with the structure that everybody around them is used to, because you're not going to be rewarded with investments if people have to struggle to understand what you're talking about.
So you must have seen quite a bit of this that's a little bit off the wall.
I've seen a lot of stuff that's off the wall. And usually what happens is people will call me and they'll say, Joel, listen, I've got all my docs. I'm a total syndicator. I'm a rock star, blah, 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 except for one problem. What problem is that? I can't raise any money. I got like the best deals. Like, I don't know why they're not standing in line for my deals. And I look at it and I'll say, there's a couple things that go wrong. One is this is a wacko deal that no one's ever going to do because it's too one-sided. Or number two, a lot of times attorneys who are not business people will, write deals that are too much in favor of one person or another. And since you hired them, they're going to advocate for you. But advocating for you doesn't necessarily mean, taking everything in the world away from the other person on the other side of the table. The attorney has to be mindful, and usually they're not, unfortunately, of the deal. So they need to think about you, but they also need to think about the deal, because if the deal is not reasonable, the person on the other side of the table is never going to say yes. And then you end up at ground zero, out all the money you paid the attorney. So, you know, there's a certain middle ground. And believe me, we've seen a lot of this. You know, there's just, and let me just give you the simplest, if I could give you the simplest example. We had a guy call and say, you know, Joel, how much money do you think we should raise? Well, how much do you need? I mean, you know, he goes, well, I'm buying this building for $3 million. I said, so why are you even asking me? You already know. He goes, well, because I just called an attorney and the guy said just that for free, he'll put an extra zero on there and let me raise $30 million for the same price of the private placement. So I could save a lot of money. And I said, you know, that's like the worst advice I've ever heard anyone given ever. In my lifetime, that might be the worst. And here's why. Because you need $3 million. So let's say you go out and you raise $3 million. You think your investors would be impressed? They'd be very impressed. $3 million is not a small number to start with. And number two, you said you were going to do three. You did three. You hit 100%. You got an A-plus on your assignment. You did awesome. First test that they give you, you did awesome. But let's say that you write down you're going to raise $30 million and you only go out and raise three. And I don't want to mean only, because $3 million is a lot. You know. So let's say you raise three and your document says 30 and you're successful at raising three. You buy the building. Everything is humming along. What's the investor's impression of you now? They think that you're a total failure because you only got 10% of your objective. Your objective was 30. So the attorney, meaning well, they don't necessarily mean to do you harm because they're advocating for you, but they don't know what happens in the field, in the marketplace. And so I see this all the time in all different kinds of capacities. And that's the reason why when we build these structures, we have a businessman, me, and an attorney. We work together and we make sure that these kind of dumb things that you might not even notice. I mean, you might think $30 million is like the greatest deal you ever got because you're saving, you know, 90%. The guy's giving you, 10 to one. But the truth is, it's the worst advice you ever got. It's going to set you up for failure and you're going to lose the confidence of investors after you've hit a home run and done fantastic and you still look terrible. So you just got to be careful. You know, it's a weird business, but you got to be careful because there's a lot of landmines and sandbags and different things.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Which structure do you prefer? Do you prefer syndications or funds?
Well, there is no prefer. What do you prefer? A driver or a putter? You get what I'm saying?
Fair enough.
You get what I'm saying? That you need to have a whole bag of tools that you take out on a golf course and you use the right tool at the right time. A syndication is a tool and a fund is a tool and a JV is a tool and a convertible note is a tool. And there's a right time to use each of those. Unfortunately, a lot of people do not use them exactly in the right way at the right time, and they get themselves in legal trouble. But you want to match the tool to the situation. And unfortunately, most people don't know how to do that, but that's the right way to do it. So I don't much care if somebody does a syndication or fund. For example, they might start with a fund, and then they got 20 investors, and the fund's going to buy B and C assets in the Midwest. And then they find a building in Florida, like an industrial building. And so two or three investors go to the syndicator and they say, hey, listen, we just found this deal, the sponsor, not the syndicator, let's say, call them the sponsor. We just found this deal in Florida. You know, you want to do it with us? Yeah, let's get three, four of the guys who are in the fund. It's not perfect for the fund because it's different than what's been agreed on. But, you know, hey, listen, let's get three or four of us and we'll syndicate that one project on a one project basis instead of on an ongoing basis like what a fund is. So, you know, listen, every situation is different. These things are not mutually exclusive. Just because you use one doesn't mean you can't have the other. You can have a fund and five syndications. You can have two funds and two syndications. Whatever the right mix is for you, that's what you should do.
Mm-hmm. As you've scaled both your, many of your businesses, like what are some things that you think back on? What are some things that you did that allowed you to scale?
I am very clear, about what my skills are. I am very, very good at a couple things and I am really weak in probably all the other ones. You know, now the problem with entrepreneurial people is we're all pretty good at a lot of things and maybe really good at one or two things, but we put a lot of energy on the medium stuff. And that's a big mistake. You know, you have to get other people to do excellently what you are mediocre at. I'm not a great writer. I'm not a great designer. I don't program. There's so many things that I don't do. And so I send all those things out. I have a substantial team of people. They handle all of these different things for me. And I circulate those to the people. And my job is to be the quarterback. I think of it as a casting director. I put the right person in the right job and I give it to them. So when I've got different kinds of writers. I have a business writer. I have a creative writer. So when I need something that's more marketing creative, I send it to one person. If it's more dry in business, I send it to another person. And I know exactly which person to send it to. And that's a skill that I think most people probably could use some improvement in.
Oh, yeah. I mean, were you always that way or did it take you some time to learn those lessons?
I cannot say that I was born this way. I would tell you that trial by fire, by making a lot of mistakes, wasting a lot of money and doing things that I wasn't satisfied with, you learn. Now, there's an easy way to learn. There's a hard way to learn. The easy way to learn is by getting somebody to mentor you, help you, whatever, you know. The hard way to learn is do it yourself. And I've had a combination of others. I've had great mentors. I've been in groups. I really endorse mastermind groups and places. I'm in a couple of masterminds, and you need to be around people who know how to do things. I encourage other people to join mastermind groups and things, and because the collective wisdom is powerful.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I like how you put there that you have a couple of strengths and a lot of weaknesses, and you just sub out all the ones you're no good at. So
we all do.
Absolutely. Joel, let's jump here into the final four if we can. They are as follows. What is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
Money follows expertise. So figure out what you're good at and do that. Don't spread yourself out too thin. Don't jump all over the place. If you like rehabbing single family homes, then do that. And don't think, well, I could make more money if I was working on industrial properties. Just do what you're good at until you learn to be good at something else, because money follows expertise.
That's a good line. I haven't heard that one. That's good. What is one thing you are currently doing to stay on top of your game?
I listen to a lot of podcasts and I do a lot of research. So, not like research like a scientist, but I'm paying attention to what people say. And I try to pay attention to a skill that has become in short supply here in the United States, critical thinking. I try to separate the wheat from the chaff as best I can, and believe what I believe some of it. I don't believe all of it, because a lot of people, especially on social media, they puff, they tout, they kind of blow the balloon up a little bit too much. So you kind of have to peel back the onion a little bit, but I try to, kind of dig into what other people are doing, think about what's happening in the marketplace and get a sense about it. That's important.
Right. Absolutely. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you're making the world a better place?
I was the chairman of the board of the Los Angeles Boys and Girls Club for several years. These are some of the most distressed families in Los Angeles. That was a great experience. And I continue to support those endeavors. I just think, as much as I think that all of the humanitarian issues and racial issues and everything we're dealing with are very important, we are not investing enough in children. Mm-hmm. And these problems are not going to go away if we don't invest in the children.
Right. Absolutely. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, Joel, what's the best way to do that?
Go to bullseyecap.com. And if people are interested in our symposium, our syndication hedge fund symposium, because they want to learn how to raise equity capital, they can go to syndicatefast.com, syndicatefast.com.
Awesome. Joel, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Hey, well, thanks for having me on your show.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.